You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I think I almost strangled you that day.
You did, dude. You were so mad at me. And I'm like, dude, he doesn't even understand that he's making me learn Vivaldi. I don't even want to learn.
There's definitely a moment on one of those GoPros where I'm just standing behind
you. Oh, yeah, dude.
Yes. And I'm ready. And I was like, too many witnesses. It's fine.
Yeah, no, no. Dude,
I would have erased the tape, man. You would have been fine.
It would have been back. A decomposing composer.
Oh, no. No one would have ever found you. Don't worry about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Benny Goodman. I'm here with my cohorts, Corey Peza and Siobhan Cronin, and our honorary cohort, Matthew LaPierre from Lost Symphony, and some three band or something. I don't know. He's going to talk about it. What band are you in now?
3 years gone.
He's on an awesome guitarist, and he's here to introduce himself. Matt, who are we going to hear about this week?
Who?
You're introducing yourself. We've 2020'd our guest into doing his own introduction. Oh. So, Mac, will you please introduce yourself?
Will the real Matthew LaPierre please stand up?
I'm just a guy that plays notes sometimes.
And I'm just a girl.
And you're going to hear all about this guy. It's Matt LaPierre of Lost Symphony fame.
Jackson great guitar episode. Charvel enthusiast.
Yeah,
and this is we'll very indicative of what you're going to hear in this episode, which is just a bunch of nonsense, but some good information and a great story about how Matt got into music and what led him to dealing with our bullshit.
And this cheap ways of dropping the word dick.
Yes. 2020-2020-D.com. Like subscribe. And subscribe. Check out the episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Benny Goodman, and that is 2020, my friends. They didn't like my other open, so I'm going to do this one instead. Hey, how are you? I'm with my cohorts, as we've deemed ourselves, Corey Peza and Siobhan Cronin. How are you guys? How are you?
Still great. Still great.
Still great. So same as before.
That's amazing. And I'd like to tell you about one of the greatest treasures that you may not know about, despite the fact that he's literally a living prodigy. Truly crazy and built like a tank, Matthew LaPierre.
Howdy.
Oh, by the way, he plays guitar for Lost Symphony, a band that, if you guys didn't know and haven't subscribed to 2020-D.com or gone to LostSymphony.com, we are a band that during the COVIDs decided to pivot, and Sound Talent Media said, all right, we'll take your pivot, and have allowed us to do this. Isn't that great, Corey?
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
Imagine what we would do if we didn't have this. Who knows?
So anyway, Matt, welcome.
I'm doing this still.
Glad to be here.
For those that don't know, Matt LaPierre has been a pretty constant across all of the Lost Symphony records. So you're one of the best, Matt. You've made the grade several times. How many songs do you want?
It's also true.
It's got to be like 9, 10, something like that.
You expect me to count past 4? That's not fair. I don't know. I think it's been, what, three on each.
I think, Matt, I can fairly say that you are the closest thing to a human guitar machine that Corey and myself have ever worked with, in that, like, we could tell you, you've said it yourself, like, I'll sing an idea to you, or Corey will be like, if you did the descending arpeggio with a minor, because he's smart, and you're pretty smart too, like, you understand what he's saying, and I'll just like yell like, no, you're bringing orange, and you actually play, like, you can do almost any style, you're like a chameleon, but you still always sound like Matt, because it's so fluid, but you're able to take like this insane sweep picking and this tremolo picking and insert any technique here and like wield it like a fucking doppelganger. It's like the T-1000 of shred.
Yeah, I think you're scaring our own guest away.
No, this is great. This is the first time I've ever heard that before myself. So, I mean, thank you.
You're like, yeah. Fuck! And then you put your fucking to the guy's face.
I think for, so just for some context, Matt is also one of the few guitarists that we actually get to work with in person for Lost Symphony. A lot of the guests are remote and they're just sending their tracks in, but Ben and I have had the chance to sit with Matt and work out solos, work out, you know, harmonies and those sessions.
I love that. That's the word you use, work out. I don't think that Matt would ever say spending time with me doing a solo would be called working things out. Would you, Matt?
It's more
how would you
just
describe
like, here,
our
I have
process?
This color in mind. Yeah, it's basically
just a slow
you have a color
unraveling.
And it's that's the sound. Yeah, that, you know, that works. It's, I mean, honestly, it's one of those things. It's having the two of you, especially when we first started doing this, being able to go, all right, so Benny has this sort of idea in his head. I've had something that I came sort of prepared with. And then Corey will have like, oh, these are the technical terms. That this is what you're, these are the words you're looking for. Benny has the sounds I'm looking for. And then I have to try and put them all together.
So the difference between you and me, though, is that I have a similar experience, except I come with no ideas and then I just panic.
Oh, that's.
But and
that's
somehow it turned into
the
something.
The other thing that's funny,
improv.
Though, is that when I make Matt angry, is that the irony is he actually could punch like through my face like the Terminator. Because if you haven't tuned in to the YouTubes yet, which you should do, Matt is a hunk of meat, man. And I mean like solid piece of meat, like bison. Like that dude. Okay, I got to tell you, Matt, the thing that's weird for me is I don't understand muscles in rock and roll. It doesn't make sense. Like when George Lynch got big, I felt like his tone got smaller. You know what I mean? But like, but you are like Samson without his hair. It makes no sense because the bigger you get, the better your playing is. And I don't understand it because that guy Doyle from the Misfits, I feel like he hasn't gotten any better, even though he's like shredded at 90.
Oh, he's shredded. Yeah.
At 90.
As Chris would say,
and with the,
I
and
store
with the girl
all my talent
within
in my
Temptation
neck.
Or whatever, Arch Enemy or whatever. You probably hate that I fucked that up.
Well, there's a precedent on this show for multiple men to take their shirts off. So you're welcome to join that crowd if you'd like to. show everybody what you got. But no pressure, of course. Just letting you know it's happened before on this show.
Yeah, I think I'll refrain.
Was that Siobhan, super, like borderline pushing something overtly sexual?
No, not at all. I'm just saying.
Consent,
this has happened on
all right. Consent.
This has happened on the show before.
I signed the form.
You know.
This consent already, I guess. So. It took
wasn't
a little
too,
while, but we figured
too much
it out.
For you?
Yeah. No, Matt and I had a phone call before this because I'm really bad with technology, but he was having trouble signing the form. So I, you know, had to help him out a little bit.
Sounds like a guitarist thing.
I never said I could
Matt,
read.
That's all right. No, but Matt is also one of the few people that I've met like in person on Lost Symphony because really most of the guitar players, I haven't actually been in the same room as them. So this feels special.
Yeah. You didn't even meet Paul, but that's because Paul's antisocial and has that's just true. Never chosen to like make it from Taunton to Randolph, which is not far, guys. Like for reference, it's
closer
it's
than
just, imagine like not that far and then that's how far it is. Like it's not that that's far. So,
very
like, the fact that Paul
very
doesn't
specific.
Come, it's not anything personal. I mean, he'll tell you that, but, like, don't be surprised. Matt, on the other hand, is the man and has hung out, like, with us and Ollie. And actually, Matt, I'll tell you something. This is a story about Ollie, and, you know, he's on this record, and we actually have a new record coming out, Chapter 3, which is, like, an homage to Ollie. And it was funny because when I was introduced to Ollie, I guess I didn't put two and two with how, like, influential and big of a star he was until Matt came down to the studio. And I didn't know Matt that well. I just knew he was ridiculous and like I enjoyed his playing. And Matt came down when Ollie was there and he like looked at me and said something to the effect of, you know, like, dude, do you realize it's like the dude from All That Remains? And like I like watched his videos, dude.
He's, sounds just like Matt.
He's amazing. But like I had no idea. I'm like, dude, that's just a weird like warrior wizardy guy with that like has a long beard thingy and he plays pretty good and I didn't really get it. And then Joey Concepcion came down and he was like scared. He was like legit scared to play in front of Ollie and was like playing like,
he, like turned his back a little bit until I started cracking jokes and I gave him I think he recorded his first solo on one of my Jacksons because he was just like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, we're just people. Yeah, I mean, I'm just people. Like, Ollie wasn't just people. I'm just people, but, you know.
Well, one of the things about Joey, and I remember you guys, and I think we even have it on camera, like you and maybe we can find it, Corey. He's like, no, we don't have that kind of time.
Corey's like, I don't have time to search through the archives.
When Joey like got the take for Negation Delirium, whatever, he's like, are you guys sure? Like, and Matt and Ollie looked at each other at the same time, like, yeah, man, that was the take.
Was that a ham and eggs take?
That's a ham and eggs take.
I think
yeah, dude, that was ham and eggs. I'm like, with bacon, with sausage. You know, like, because Joey, he's one of those guys that, like, he just does takes, like, the takes of that are right. And it was one of those things that watching you, and because the other thing is that you and Joey, as far as I'm concerned, are as good and in some ways even superior to Ollie, and then he said it in his life while you were here. Even in that day, he said it to you because he was mighty humble and sometimes self deprecating. So I don't know how much he truly meant.
Yeah,
but dude, you guys are so freaking amazing, and to see how humble and shy you were around him showed me like, wow, maybe I should have more respect for this dude. Maybe he really is that sick, because I thought you guys were bananas, and I just thought Ollie wanted to eat my food.
Yeah, I mean. Dude, I grew up, I mean, All the Remains was one of my favorites, especially when I started getting into metal. And then I still have his instructional DVD. I wrote a paper on him when I was in college, like, aww. And then just walking into the studio, like, hey, just come down. We're going to work on it was Symphony at the time. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. I got out of work, was still in my work clothes, and just came down, and I'm like, that's Ollie just sitting there. Playing guitar, it's happening. I'm here, it's happening. And like, but I tried to, you know, compress all that into just, hey,
you
can
see how excited you were. And the funny part is that you're like 113, you're like a solid, you're like me lighter. Like, you, like, if you lost me, like, and does you're just like, you look like more like a little kid in the picture, because like, dude, like, we started this a long time ago. Like, we're pushing like over half a decade. So like, for you, like, that's a difference of looking different. Like, I have ulcers that are older than that. You know what I mean? But like, I remember like the look of total joy in your face when you were like, that's Ollie. And I had total respect for your reverence for him. And it really kind of took a slap in the face before I was like, all right, I guess I'm working with a musical genius. And then when we started like listening to the solos that like Corey would Frankenstein with him, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's a savant. Because if you just caught like the little pieces of magic, because like, he didn't like, he's not a take guy like Joey, where like, he just shits out excellence. He's like, he works it out so methodically that you just like kind of almost want to stop. You're like, man, you don't need to work out anymore. Like, just stop. No, I need to practice. I just need to practice this one part one time more. And it's like, he did need to practice.
I used to love his like little epiphanies when he'd be writing a solo and he'd be like, oh, I need to angle the pick at 13 degrees to hit that.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Okay, guy, I'm good to go now.
That was the weirdest moment when he was just like, what are you doing? Because for anyone that's ever seen my pick hand, like, I pick weird.
It's a mess. It's a mess, man.
It is a mess, but I do a lot of tapping, so it's always good to have my index finger open. So
you also have like legit, you dispel all rumors. You have like the sausagiest fingers of any human being on the planet.
I do.
And that's like violinists too, though. Like, think about a lot of that. I always think about that with violinists. You would think like long, thin fingers is good, but some of the greatest players had like really, really big fingers. That's where the tone is.
Yeah, I've got cinder block hands. You know what they say about people with big
fingers? Don't finish that sentence.
Big rings.
But yeah, so
David German,
true.
I think we should definitely get into some Lost Symphony tracking stories and talk. We can talk a bit more about Ollie, but first off, you know, before we get too deep, let's let the viewers, listeners kind of get to know you a little bit, Matt. You know, talk about how you got into music in the first place and where you started out.
So I actually started before I was super into, I mean, music's always been around. My mom, I grew up, she always sang. You know, I actually grew up in the church too. So like, there's always music around and like hearing, actually some of like the best musicians I've heard have actually heard in church. Cause it's all those gospel chops. So it's one of those, sure. It's like, oh yeah. But I actually started with art before anything else, before I decided to go to school for music, I was going to go for sculpture. So
that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So I used to,
why don't you want to make money?
Hmm.
Why don't you want to make money?
I mean, I still have a regular job, so.
Well, are you saying you would make more money doing sculpture?
Like,
yeah.
What
or?
Else other than sculpture and music could you possibly do that? Like, other than like aspiring to be like a sociologist, you know what I mean? Like that, like literally you'd make less money and like it'd be more difficult other than being a teacher.
I mean, I did carpentry and everything too. So there's
everyone do carpentry. Oh my God. You could make so much money. I have things you could do right now, Matt. You're in my area code. Like, why don't you just come over? Dude, how are you with bathrooms?
Okay, don't derail the conversation.
You know what? We're not going
there.
We'll get to the bathroom remodels in the second episode.
Yeah. No, but this is... Okay, how did you get into sculpture? I want to hear about this, because that's an art form that I feel like I never even encountered. Like, in school, that you don't do that at school, right? I mean, where do you figure this out?
I did, actually. Believe it or not, like... I grew up in Quincy. It's a bit of a lawless wasteland, but at least with the school systems, they had this program when I got to high school. It was called the Renaissance program, where you had to basically sort of audition for whichever field of the arts you wanted to get into. I was doing, you know, actual just like physical mediums and then like drawing, painting, all that stuff. So they had that, they had theater, they had music, and they had dance, if I remember right. And so basically for the last two periods of the day, you would go and just focus on whichever field you got into. So I actually, at the time, I couldn't read music. So I auditioned for the music aspect of it. And, they were like, you have the chops, but you can't read to save your life. And I was like, that's very true. So I also had been doing art for years. And they were like, oh yeah, you're good to go. Like, come on. So I did. And, I spent most of that time while I was also focusing on, again, with like physical mediums and everything, I was also building guitars when I was in high school. So that was kind of part of that whole sculpture aspect too.
How did you learn that? Like, so you were obviously playing guitar already when you were getting into sculpture. So how did you learn the first thing about building guitars?
The thing was, I grew up, my grandfather, who's probably one of my biggest influences, he's a carpenter for years. And we literally had a wood shop down the basement. So when I started getting into guitar, I would like, you know, just try and make some like little makeshift, even like ukulele kind of things. And, you know, trying to figure out pickups and how wiring worked and all that fun stuff, and burnt myself quite a few times with the soldering iron. So that was great.
I feel like Matt's severely underutilized at this point. We're learning all these things.
I'm discovering all these talents, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. But I ended up, you know, I bought some books when I was, I think it was like my junior year of high school, on how to actually build stuff.
Do you know how much of a chump you are for buying books? There is this place called the library where you could just go and they'll give you books.
This is true, but I also destroyed most of these. They got wood glue and all that.
They don't really find you.
Anyway, I bought the books. And so I was just learning how to do all that stuff. I ended up building a guitar for one of my teachers my senior year, which ended in a whole mess, but we won't get into that. So
wait, how does building a guitar for your senior year?
There has to be a Cliff Notes version of that.
Become a mess. Like
I went to court over it. We'll say that.
You went to court. I mean, I've gone to court over a guitar, but like,
did you hit him with the guitar?
But what did you do about it?
No, I did not hit him. I should have. I was a kid at the time, so he like backed out. It was a whole thing. So he wanted a Les Paul. I built him a Les Paul. And when he finally came to get it, like, it had just, it's so basically when you build stuff with wood, it takes time to actually cure and like, you know, adjust to string tension, as you guys, I'm sure, know. Same with violins, same with guitars. Like, everything has to settle first. And he kind of rushed it and showed up and was like, well, this isn't ready. This is unplayable, blah, blah, blah. I'm not paying for this. So I was like, okay, well, then you're not getting your money. Your deposit back. And then I was like, I can try and sell it. And then if, you know, whatever, I can give it back to you. And nope, there was no one. It was built specifically for him. So, yeah, Cliff Notes version, he sued me over the guitar and the parts costs and everything. I was like 18.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, yeah, so that was fun. Ugh. But
did you win or did you lose?
So basically they were like, just pay the court costs and like give him whatever and you keep the guitar. So I was like, okay. So now it just sits in a case somewhere in my apartment.
Oh.
But yeah, so
should've had me.
That was fun. It was hilarious taking time off because I was in New Hampshire at the time working and had to come back. And they were like, "Hey, you got a court summons." I was like, "For what?" Because I mean, again, not getting into anything specific. Sure, I'm like, "What did I do?"
Yeah.
and they're like, "Just come home." And so I had to take time to go in. And it was like in the middle of nowhere, the courthouse, and not a great time. But sitting there in the mediation room, he was a little guy, and I wasn't huge at the time. But I was just like, I was full of piss and vinegar and scrappy, we'll say. And I was just sitting there like, you know, we just take care of this. And he was like, no, it's fine. Everything's no, we're going to go through the court process. All right.
Ugh.
Cool. My dad was with me at the time too. He's just like, everything all right in there? I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah, everything's fine. It's going to be great.
So and, you got your first lawsuit out of the way early. That's good.
Yeah. I did. That was a long-winded story for a guitar, but yeah. So anyway, building guitars, got into that. Ended up going the music route because that kind of took over my senior year of high school. I got super into it. Plus, I was like diving headfirst into metal and jazz and all these weird subgenres. Metal and
jazz. That's like a very diametric.
trying to find your words.
Yeah, man. It's like that's
well, the that's plus my and dichotomy minus. Is I think the word you're looking dichotomy. For is that yeah.
No,
that
so you're
sort
metal and jazz.
Smooth and
your gypsy jazz with your Metallica.
But what was the early influence though? Because I feel like those are such extreme things to like be driven to so early. You know, I feel metal.
Extreme?
Well, no, but I think did you have an exposure to some like performance or something on TV or recording? Like, was there some reason that you were drawn to those genres right away?
Is it Bush?
So I grew up listening to a lot of like, I actually found a bunch of records when I was younger that belonged to my aunt. So like Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, Kansas,
records?
Like Toys in the Attic, Rocks, and Draw the Line. I still
Paul
have
Paul Lorenzo will still be your friend.
That's good. But yeah, so they basically, I always loved that guitar driven music and I thought it was great, but I always wanted something more. And then when I found like, well, Pantera basically ruined me for all metal, as I'm sure it did most people.
Yeah. You know? My heart stopped after.
Oh yeah.
There was no reason to continue.
No,
it had been done.
It's so good.
It's crazy. True. It's crazy. The step up in like,
it was
know,
a new
you think,
fucking
you think,
level, Corey.
Exactly, right? There you go. But that really, you don't think, you kind of see like, oh, I like metal. I like this aggressive music. It's got a lot of energy. Yep. It's fast, does all this stuff. And you're like, I think I'll like, you know, you listen to a bunch of metal bands. And then you hear Pantera and you hear the guitar and you hear the drum. And you're just like, this is different. This is more than metal.
It's like, raw.
Yeah.
It's raw. It's aggressive. It just punches you right in the face when you listen to it. And I was like, I've never felt this before. This is exciting and dangerous. I'm all about it. Like this is the war that's in my head all the time. It's just in music form.
Can I tell you that I went to the last show ever at the Worcester Auditorium because Pantera shut it down. They did. First off, they had a band called Anal Cunt open for them, which if you've ever heard Anal Cunt, yeah, you don't have to call them that. they say a lot of crazy shit. And then they had Cold Chamber and Anthrax, and it was John Bush in his prime Anthrax, which I fucking absolutely loved that era. I was front because I got there early because I still had that piss and vinegar where I was like, dude, if they opened the doors at 2, we could get there at 7 in the morning and wait. And I would seriously do whatever I had to do to run in, go as fast as I could, hold on to that little piece of railing. And I remember my friend Adam was like a small dude and he like got so pushed into the railing that he said he puked because like we literally got like destroyed because like back in the day, like you had to like fucking hold on. And at a Pantera show, it was like first off, like I saw some guy get stabbed. He's covered in blood. He's still in the pit, just like bleeding on people like, ah. And then they had a balcony and some dude jumped from the balcony into the pit during the show. And I was like,
metal.
Is this what metal is? And then meanwhile, Dimebag Darrell's just like pointing up and he's like pulling like fucking dive bombs and fucking Mm-hmm. And then they have Big Vin just like feeding everyone alcohol in the front row. And I'm like, this is insane.
So what year was this?
This was Vulgar Display of Power. The Great Southern Trendkill Tour. So this is probably 98, 97, 98.
I was six.
I was just thinking, I was like, I was maybe playing like Suzuki violin books.
You were the one that jumped off the balcony there. That was you.
I mean, at that age, for sure. But Pantera opened the door to like all that extreme music and then finding bands.
He opened the Cemetery Gates.
The Cemetery Gates. And from there, like bands like Killswitch Engage, where they had like the melodic aspect with the singing and then the screaming. I just was like, this is what I've wanted forever. And now it's here. But at the same time, discovering like Charlie Parker and like Dizzy Gillespie and like just there's so many great jazz musicians that I was like just diving into at the time and loving. Just because there was that weird sort of like there's a virtuosic nature to anything that they're doing because it's improvised, but it's still, I mean, some of it's the avant-garde stuff, not for me, but I mean, like the fact to have that knowledge at your fingertips of like, okay, here's all the available notes to play here, like including all the accidentals, everything, and then still making it melodic and tasteful. And I don't know, it was just awesome at the time. Especially like I said, Charlie Parker was my guy. He still is.
Were you taking lessons or were you mostly self-taught? Like how did you get into like learning the, you know, actual reading or?
So I was self-taught all the way up until college. I took like a couple lessons like, oh, here's how to tune your guitar and here's some, you know, here's a G and C and D chord. Like, and a lot of stuff I ended up learning by ear, which was good. And at the same time, didn't help when it came to like actually going to college for music. And they're like, oh, you have to write all this out in like actual notation. I was like, not tabs. They're like, oh no, that doesn't exist.
It's yet. Like that moment when like you're in school and they're like, you don't know how to read.
Oh yeah.
Well, Cause like, that's the thing is I remember like going to UNH or whatever, going for the audition and they're like, yeah. So do you have any prepared pieces? And I was just like, did some kind of improvised jam. And they just looked at me like,
I can imagine this scenario.
Are you serious? I'm like, and they're just like, nah, dude, we don't want you.
And then you're like, do you know who I am?
No.
Right. Did you pull that in?
No, actually, I was wicked intimidated because first off, I didn't like performing and I didn't have any confidence because I didn't have the ability, first off, to read. Because my ear was good, but my skills with my hands were only so much at that moment, especially on guitar, where I wasn't really able to certainly impress anyone where they were like, he's going to be a good one. Like if I saw myself, then I'd be like, oh yeah, dude, get this guy out of Guitar Center. He's just going to be a dick. There's nothing good. What is he going to do? Start playing Furlise, that fucking asshole. Like Bach, get the fuck out of here. Get to the Bach of the line, you fucking Debussy.
Now you just scream at everyone else and get them to do it.
it's effective apparently, so
it works.
I just can't handle it.
I got that joke. That...
So what was the transition like when you actually had to start kind of filling in that the foundation of what you kind of already physically knew, you know, what to do with?
Oh, that was a huge struggle. It's still a struggle. There are times, both of you see me in the studio where I'm like, oh, I still know modes and I know all the stuff I need to know, but I haven't had to actually like sight read anything in probably, I don't know, like 8 years. So, you know, yeah. Knock on wood. But
I just have Kelly teach it to me.
There you go. I mean, I can still, but that was
he's
one of the
cheap,
good
dude.
Things.
Like he really is. Like he takes Canadian loonies, which literally you can get for like nothing. You can trade like Tootsie Rolls for Canadian loonies and he'll teach you real shit. And he like even talks to you afterwards and goes over the half hour. It's fucking ridiculous. I'm like, dude, don't you
super
have something
nice
to be
and
doing?
He's Canadian.
Yeah. And he doesn't charge anything. So
this
I'm like,
episode
I don't even mind
sponsored
talking
by
through half our
Kelly.
Fucking
right. Kareluk.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now you're ruining
the other
his
guitar
chances
player
of upping
from
his
fucking Lost Symphony. I say that because Matt really was like the guy in the studio with us on our end when Kelly was sending us his fucking banana shit from Canada. I felt like it was almost like the gauntlet thrown between you two at first, and Ollie, because everyone's like, how did you get all these people on your record? I'm like, well, because we had Matt, who's fucking ridiculous. Because we have Kelly, who's fucking ridiculous. Because we had Conrad, who's fucking ridiculous. We had Ollie, who's fucking ridiculous, on top of having Paul, who's one of the craziest drummers ever. So you gave us legitimacy to go to guys like Bumblefoot or Satchel and have them actually be like, oh, I guess I could do this.
Yeah, those dudes, when you guys started showing me some of the Lost Symphony tracks, that was, again, when I was in college, I had a lot of like composition courses where I would have to write these like ridiculous orchestral pieces or like piano concertos where it's just like, okay, you have four different moving parts and there's counterpoints and everything's going at the same time. And I was just like, oh, I'm super into this. And then I'm hearing like guys like Kelly, or I think the one I heard first was him with, was that Singularity with Bumblefoot?
Mm-hmm.
Just listening and being like, okay, this is, I'd love to be a part of this. And then when you told me that Ollie was on it, I was like, all right, yeah, no, I'm in. It's all I needed. But yeah, that was a whole transition too, because that was with what, One Short Breath at the time?
Well, before I was even
in the band.
Well, what happened was I was doing Symphony, which was like my guitar collective with Ollie, where we were nerding out going, okay, we got this guy Kelly, we got this guy Conrad, and we have you, and so we were like, we were nerding all out about that shit. And then you came down and he was just like, dude, that guy could do anything. He's so much better than me. He's awesome. And I remember the way that you actually came down the first time was Donnie, who's we were playing in One Short Breath and you weren't in the band yet, was like, yeah, dude, I know this guy, Matt. And he's like, he's literally as good as any of the guys on your record. I'm like, no, he's not. And like anyone that knows me knows that like if you're going to throw down a guitar big dick contest, I'll go all day. And I'm like, dude, he's definitely not better than the people I have. I got fucking Ollie. I got Conrad. I got Kelly. Like, he's not better. And then Matt came down one day and he, with his fucking sausage fingers, started fucking Jason Beckering it circa 1986. Not now, unfortunately. And I was like, holy fucking shit. And I literally didn't even talk to the rest of the band. They were all in the room. I was like, would you like to be in our band? And they're all like looking at me like,
asked me first. I was like,
we didn't even talk about it. And I was like, dude, listen, if they don't want you in the band, then I quit.
Hijacking it. Wow, nice.
Yeah, that's
pretty much exactly
Donnie
how it
just
went.
Invited me down to come hang out. He's like, Benny has a studio, he's got all these guitars, you should come check it out. And he's like, he's got a bunch of Paul Reed Smiths. And I was like, all right. I think we ended up just having like an acoustic jam. Corey was in there, I think, tracking with Chris or Tony at the time, so I didn't really get to interact with Corey at that point.
Yeah, when I was over there, I was usually in the zone with someone, and everyone was like having a good time and enjoying themselves, and I was just like buried in the computer yelling at one specific person to do it again.
Ambiance, and you're making sure like the record gets done.
Yeah, no, you kept everyone entertained.
Very important.
It was always like everyone kind of sitting around, and then eventually people would just start like filtering out to the other room because they realized that like
it was more fun out there.
This was a no fun zone,
right? Well, wait, before
or you'd be like, I don't want to hear it. I'm like, I'm literally trying to comp drums, and you guys are talking about fucking Gibsons. Get the fuck out of here. But like nicer.
No, but not to stop that conversation, but I wanted to go back, Matt. I want to hear a little bit about your experience with music school. You kind of started on it because I went to music school, and I'm always curious about hearing other people's experiences, how they felt about it, if it was useful, like some of the coursework you did, because I feel like I learned a lot in music school, but I feel like so much of what I actually do, I learned after music school. So I'm curious about your experience.
Pretty similar, honestly. It was one of those things. It wasn't specifically a music school. They just happen to have a great music program. The head of the department was very classical oriented, which I love classical music as well, but it's not my go-to. Again, I tend to gravitate more just towards jazz. So they happen to have a jazz band there, and there was a gospel choir band there as well. So I got to combine the two, which was great. So going in there, having all this technical knowledge and not having names for things. I was also at the time, one of my best friends, Pete, actually, his band was in, you know, Guitar Hero back in the day. And he was teaching me some theory stuff so I could come in and not feel like...
What band was that?
Breaking Wheel. They did... they were on, I think, the first Guitar Hero, second Guitar Hero, Rock Band, Rock Band 2.
Wow.
So, because Harmonix is right out of Boston, so... but anyway, they, so I was taking like pseudo lessons while I was just hanging out with my buddy, and he's, you know, teaching me, he's like, all right, well, this is, you know, you go from Ionian to, and then, you know, all these different, all the different modes, and kind of helping me with the music reading aspect of things too. So I was like getting sort of tutored before I got in there, so I didn't look like a huge idiot, but.
Hold on. I don't want to sound like I'm a huge idiot, but when I learned the modes, like at least a week ago, isn't it just the same notes but just moving them one more? So like if you took a bunch of checkers and you put them, or even like let's say Tootsie Pops, put them like eight of them and then did them all, and then you just like took the one on the end and then moved it to that, that's the Ionian, and this is the Dorian, this is the Mixolydian, this is the Lydian, and this isn't that what it is?
That just hurt to listen to. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even know what just happened.
No, yeah, you're right. You're right, Ben.
But so that's, it's basically, that's just, it's yeah,
it's the, but that's
it's just all the same notes,
but the application.
It's just you're starting you exactly.
But Miles Davis told me it's 80% of the attitude of the motherfucker playing the note. Is that not accurate?
It's all about intention. And if you know what you're doing with the modes, great. If not, and so it still sounds good, good for you.
Like, so what's the difference between intentions versus accidentals?
What do you mean, adding notes that are outside of the scale?
Don't even humor him.
We're not. He just
the
derailed
only way
my
to
question.
Win is
we
not to play about, at this point.
We were about to get into the nerdy stuff about music school. I was ready to hear all about it.
Well, it wasn't super nerdy. I was not great. I, you know, I tried, but I was also working at the time. So it was one of those, I'm like, I'm trying to just, you know, make it through this. Went through a lot of courses. I went through a couple of music theory courses and loved my professors that I had. I think they were more curious. It became more of like a curiosity thing. You're like, how are you doing all these? You don't know anything, but you do, but you don't. How, like. So I would sit there and I would, you know, bring a guitar.
You're like a natural. You're what they call a natural. You have a natural aptitude, whereas all these people are trying to learn it. Like Siobhan's sitting there like, okay, the counter motion, that's perfect for this, is this.
Well, I think
no other way. Whereas Matt's just like, all right, I'm just going to feel it. He's like Marty Friedman. He's like, that sounds good. And it's always right. It's always right. And your teachers are just like, well, he doesn't know what to call it. But it's tasty. It's ham and eggs.
He was studying, but in a more like he was learning by ear mostly, whereas I was learning pretty by much. Sight. I mean, right. ear
we
also,
never let
but
his schooling get in the way of his education.
I mean, that's true. That's kind of what locked me in a lot of ways when I got out of school was like the ability to compose or improvise was so hard for me because everything was like playing everyone else's music and it was all reading sheet music and
dance,
sight
Siobhan,
reading. Yeah,
dance.
Exactly. But obviously for you, it was flip-flopped. You know, you were learning everything by ear and gaining that musicality and then picking up the terminology later.
I basically cheated my way through my music degree.
No, but that's not cheating your way. I mean, you were qualified just with different skills than the square reading classical oriented stuff, you know?
Yeah. And that was, and plus getting into that and having like a, being into the jazz band too, where that shout out to Prof Bell, if he ever sees this, he basically, he would give us the charts and stuff, and they were, you know, a lot of, most of them were chord charts for jazz scores, which was easy enough. But when they were melodic lines, you have to go through, and he would always encourage us to improvise. And that was a huge thing too. Cause when I started doing the session work stuff, like probably like right when I got out of high school while I was still in college. And it was, again, I didn't really know what I was doing theory wise, but you know, I never had any complaints. So,
it was actually, I'll tell you a really funny story about knowing your genius was, and also the dichotomy between working with you and Siobhan was I had asked you to learn a Vivaldi piece note for note at the end of a song called Decomposing Composers.
Wasn't that Beethoven?
Is it Vivaldi at the end of that song?
It's Vivaldi, Siobhan, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think said it was Beethoven. But
so you told me it was Beethoven. I had to learn a Vivaldi piece?
It's a Vivaldi piece. Yeah.
I'm an idiot. Might have messed up the composer credits on our upcoming album. Note
wrong, or Brian put it in the fucking session wrong. I'm like, I don't know. It's fucking sounds good. It's definitely
doesn't matter. It's
do.
Lost Symphony
but
now.
But the point is that we worked on that song and you literally wrote like a perfect harmony and like counterpoints, but everything but the line. You're like, no, dude, I'm playing it. And like, you didn't hear that you were writing this awesome accompaniment to the part that I wanted you to play verbatim so that Siobhan could play the other counterpart verbatim as Vivaldi had it. So like, I had to literally learn it note for note on the piano and yell it at you. So you could like by
it
ear.
It was a lot of yelling that day.
Yeah, you I by ear imagine. You learned it because I was able to then decipher it to you. But you, yeah. When you heard it, only heard what made it sound better, not the actual line. And it was fucking brilliant, but also so obnoxious between you and I. Because I'm like, but that's not what's written. So she can do her part. Why are you making me learn this whole thing?
I think I almost strangled you that day.
You did, dude. You were so mad at me. And I'm like, dude, he doesn't even understand that he's making me learn Vivaldi. I don't even want to learn.
There's definitely a moment on one of those GoPros where I'm just standing behind
you. Oh, yeah, dude.
Yes. And you I'm did, ready. Yeah. And I was like, too many witnesses. It's fine.
Yeah, no, dude, you.
I would have erased the tape, man. You would have been fine.
It would have been back. A decomposing composer.
Oh, no. No one would have ever found you. Don't worry about that.
Decomposing composer poser.
You mentioned the jazz band you were in. I know yes. At one point you were doing some touring. Was that with that group?
That was with the gospel group, actually. So we used to play shows for the jazz band, but the gospel choir, the whole tour thing was great. Getting to be on the road and like go to different places, mostly like, you know, churches and places like that, where you got these guys where you show up and like their house band is probably better than you.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, they're just filthy, filthy jazz players. And like, with the, like, that's the whole thing is.
Was the dessert good on the riders?
Ben, let him say, he was about to say something interesting.
He's saying, if you're doing the church circuit, they got to have good food.
Oh, there was great food, especially
touring
and like staying with host families. Like, we stayed with a Haitian family one time. That was some of the best food.
Oh, yeah.
So much fun. I love spicy food. What's up?
Real touring is only being able to eat like one Wendy's between all of you for like six dates. Not going to like nice people's houses and having them love you for who you are and your
beliefs. Oh, we didn't always have that, but yeah. I mean, with the gospel choir, that was
amongst your love.
Oh yeah, the love of all guilty. these great, great songs that I had to pretend I understood clapping. All the progressions. There's so many modulations in gospel songs. It's ridiculous. And then
Corey and I know we helped compose one.
A lot of suspended chords in gospel, right?
Uh-huh. And changes in time and feel. They're like in the middle of things. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, let's just go to 5/4. Why? This is how it has to be done.
Because that's how many words we have to fit in.
How is that
here?
Any different from what you do? You decide to change time signatures whenever the hell you want.
No, first off, this is where Brian comes in as a composer. He goes, do you want to fuck with him? And my answer to
he
that
he does that and then he leaves.
Yes. Yeah. He's like I'm gonna remove a 30-second note. Yeah. I've done what I need to do here.
Right. And then I'm like sweating bullets trying to count.
They're like, why does this have no feel?
Like vigorously trying to play in 13/8 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember that section. He's like, you want this? I was like, no, I'm not going to take
that's
this.
Why, that's when we knew Richard Shaw was the real deal. We're like, throw the guy from Cradle of Filth that part and let's see if he fucking sings or swims.
And the best and part is he was like, do you not have anything in 4/4?
He did say that. And then he came back with the most ridiculous solo and he sent us a video because I was like, dude, he comped this shit completely. That's total bullshit. And then if you watch the fucking video, which you could see in like the mashup, he's a huntsman spider for a fucking hand. It's disgusting. His pinky is weird. It has like weird articulation that's not human.
Must be a British thing.
Yeah.
I love his playing though.
He's disgustingly good. I compare him. I say that he's like the shred Dave Gilmour. Like if David Gilmour said, I want to play in the Scorpions, that's like what that would be.
Yeah.
Because he's that tasty, like super tasty. He's got like the school of Nuno, but he also has like that really beautiful tone. And there was times where we actually told him to let loose and he's like, I don't feel the song calls for it. I'm like, who are you? What have you done with every guitar player I've ever met? And he's like, but I'm British. We're different here.
Yeah. And you can catch Richard I believe by the time this episode comes out, we will have announced it with Nuno, right?
yeah, he's going to be on Jabber. That's
happening. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's done.
Yeah.
Not only with Nuno, but with Skolnick, with Friedman.
Love
and
Skolnick.
Then he does another song with Skolnick and Angel Vivaldi and our good friend Kelly from the band that he's actually in. And Siobhan plays some pretty sick harmonies too on everything, because when we got bored, when we finished everything, we're like, hey, Siobhan, do you think that you could do harmonies to all these insane players? And like off the top of her head, even though she's like not into improv, if you're like, do a harmony, she could like immediately go, this is what will work. This is what they played. And you see her just like mad scratching away with her fucking pencil, like right through the fucking metal. And he's, and she's like, one more time. One more time. One more time. Okay. One more time. Oh, wow. He changes the feel. Is that, okay. And then next thing you know, perfect take. Perfect harmony. First time. And she'll like take, the only person that fucked her up was Conrad Simon. She was like, I don't understand.
Conrad's,
and we realized
robot,
that
though,
he literally like subdivided time to a point where like it didn't make any sense other than to a mathematician. Or Frank Zappa.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So this episode brought to you by Lost Symphony Chapter 3.
Symphony.
Now that we're giving away all the secrets.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's go back to Matt, because we derailed him again. So you were talking about you went on tour, and this was pretty early on. And so that was a great experience for you. You were talking about like the jazz players you encountered. Or let's hear more about it.
Oh, yeah. There was, I think it was upstate New York, where I remember playing, and beforehand they played a little, like a couple songs, and just watching this guy just kind of cruise through these disgusting chromatic licks. And I'm like, I got to play next. I don't like this. What am I going to do? And then like, it's like, just go up, do your thing. Like, again, coming from a more, you know, I'm still figuring out all these, you know, I had my jazz licks, but nothing to the fluidity of this dude. That's just kind of like, that's just breathing. It's just happening, and it's natural, and it sounds amazing.
Can I just interject a idea just on you, what you're saying? Do you think we should do a pitch to Alex Boylan about having a competitive gospel show? Because I feel like there's a lot of drama that goes on behind the scenes that, like, I would never picture that, like, at the church, the other guitar players, like, stating his A1 masculinity through his chromatic licks to the other guitar player that's coming in to say their love for the same thing, supposedly. And even though it might be the same psalm, you guys are on different wavelengths.
Oh, dude, it's always head cutting. That's any guitar player will tell you. That doesn't matter what genre you're in. Mm-hmm. It's always a pissing contest. Doesn't have to be. I mean, I don't care. There's plenty of players better than me. It's music's supposed to be fun. That's the whole point of it. But it's always,
is
ego always gets
fun
in there.
No one's ever told Siobhan it was supposed to be fun.
What?
Siobhan, it's supposed to be fun. There, I told her.
I have to remind myself sometimes. No, it's hard. I mean, once you get so immersed in the craft, it's easy to get carried away.
It's only
be,
fun
like,
because
obsessive.
I get to watch Siobhan labor through things and like hate herself about it. And I'm like, this is great. She the more self-deprecating and doubting she becomes, the more I feel confident that we're getting
this
exactly what we need.
I feel like that's Corey when we do high harmonies.
Oh, but
every
it's actually a producer technique that people really do. Like again, Paul doesn't play well until you've threatened his existence and told him that he's not going to make it to work on time if he doesn't get this last take.
Oh my gosh.
Fair enough. Yeah, you don't try that tactic with me. You know better.
You actually tried to drive me off a cliff with other innocent bystanders completely sober on an island in a golf cart in the dark.
Almost killed everybody. It was intentional.
It was definitely intentional. I was like, "What? We're literally in a golf cart at like 3 o'clock in the morning on Cuddy Hunk Island off of Massachusetts. It's a real island. You can look it up, Cuddy Hunk. And one of our friends had a house there, believe it or not. And we borrowed a golf cart in the middle of the night, and it was completely black, like completely blackout. You can't see anything. And there was a cliff before we were going, and Matt knew exactly what he was doing, and he was not only shaking the vehicle.
It was on the front of the golf cart. I killed the lights, and then I grabbed onto the railings, and
he
just started rocking everything.
Yeah, he was trying to basically get us to go off a cliff.
This is on a music video shoot that I was directing for their band, Well, okay. So while this is happening and this debauchery is going on, I think my wife and I were shooting some scenes somewhere, and there's just screaming going on in the background.
The island wasn't that, it's still not that big.
Yeah. So once again, it's true. Like
population 72.
Just stone sober, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the fun stuff's happening. I'm somewhere doing work. Just I miss it on the.
I just enjoy it.
That's how I feel all the time. Oh my god!
So, with the how long did you do the gospel band with the touring? Was that just a
that was a couple of years, and then because I ended up getting, I realized I wasn't really feeling school because I wanted to, you know, go and actually do things.
Fair enough.
And it was, you know, I ended up getting my, I had enough credits at the time. I'm like, I'll just get my associate's degree in composition and theory and then go work and do things. So ended up doing that. Still doing session work throughout the whole process and working like 6 to 8 jobs at a time just to try and pay off my student debt, which was great.
As one does.
Yeah. Oh no, it's great. I didn't sleep much. I still don't sleep much. I ruined my sleep cycle during that time, but You know,
the thing that comforts me about stories like this is that we were able to give so much money to the banks because they needed it. And people like you, the artists, they get to go into life $100,000 in debt, knowing that you're just going to be part of the 99%.
Well, the good news was I had the work ethic to go and work those 6 to 8 jobs and then pay off my first loan. And then the second one's just about.
Did you work down by the dock?
Oh, my gosh.
Was the union on strike? You down on your luck? It's tough. So tough.
It was tough. And playing hockey at the time, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I hate myself. So getting
home
at like.
Don't you drive the Zamboni? Don't you drive the Zamboni machine?
Do not drive
the Zamboni. I can just imagine you just like whistling it like. It's like with you on your Zamboni.
I drove a Zamboni for a while. It was very
really.
It was a very weird job.
When I was working at the rink too, that was more of I just do the skate guard, so I help the kids skate and Mr. Skate Guard. That was the whole.
But
thing.
Hold on, wait, don't we have to pay attention to the, how Corey? You drove a Zamboni machine.
I did.
When? How did that happen?
I applied at an ice rink and then I. Had to drive a Zamboni as part of that job.
Well, what was your ambition to drive a Zamboni?
I think my friends worked there. It was, you know, 17 years old. You're not really making big plans for life. It's just like, hey, there's this gig where you drive a Zamboni and you just work by yourself and make sure no one burns the place down.
Was that when they were shooting Shazam with rink. Sinbad?
No. We've pushed far off the rails.
Matt, you're clearly a man of many interests. I mean, like the amount of energy you must have had in that time is incredible to be like going to school.
Still like early 20s and again. Just
no, but
that
that's a work ethic that you have to have.
Of, yeah. No. I'm like, yeah, I can sleep when I'm dead. I'll figure it out. And, you know, pushing closer and closer to that every day.
That's the spirit.
But it was basically, I would get up at my shift was like 4 a.m. I would work till noon, then go teach for probably like 2 hours, take a quick nap, and then I would do session work or, you know, any sort of like freelance carpentry, anything that I could do for extra cash. And then at the time I was doing this program where it was like a goalie for hire thing. So basically I'd get paid to play hockey, which was fun. So just make extra cash, you know, skating for, you know, two hours a night and then, you know, trying to pay rent with hockey money and then put the rest into my student loans.
Gosh.
So, yeah. And
it's
then
a crazy system we live in.
Yeah. Then you get home at like 1 a.m. and then go to work at 4 again and then just keep doing it every day until you slowly collapse and you fall asleep on the stairs going up to your apartment.
The American
you
dream.
Upset that your degree isn't even from something that they say, like you went to university, they just said you went to college. Because everyone else that doesn't go into debt everywhere around the world just goes to university and they seem to be smarter than us and they don't seem to be going into that same type of debt for the most part. It's weird.
Well, they don't, I think, in most other countries.
Why
if I didn't
that?
Work, I probably would have been in stupid debt. So
yeah.
Try to avoid that.
Yeah. Well, that was smart. But no, there are a lot of people that didn't do that and still are living with debt. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution is.
Without getting
is.
Into international politics and
right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually wanted to talk about interdependence. Right. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I feel like that's actually a huge part of why we kind of kiss everyone's ass in certain ways, because the interdependence going on globally is ridiculous. Whose hand is watching whose hand to get those guacamoles made? Avocados, dude. Avocados is like the fucking black market. And if you don't know that, people are dying, man. It's true.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so
go to Mexico, dude. People's heads are getting cut off for that.
We got
it's too warm down there for me.
We got a few minutes left in this first hour with you, Matt. So why don't we wrap Goody. Up, kind of bring us up to speed. So from the touring after the touring stopped and you're out of school, you're doing more session work.
Yeah, now that you're
hugely
in debt.
What brings you up to now, essentially?
To now?
That's a big period of time.
it's not a big period of time.
Matt, you're 17 Grateful Dead tours.
You just graduated college like last year, right?
No. No, that was 2013, I think. So, from there, again, just I continued working, doing all that stuff, trying to pay everything off. During that time, just doing session work for like random studios around Massachusetts and, getting to know some people.
That's a thing. People pay for that.
Yeah.
We should talk about that in the next episode, because I think session work is something that a lot of people would be mm-hmm. interested to hear about. And it's kind of mysterious for people that don't do it, you know? So maybe we can save that for next episode.
Yeah, yeah. Like mysterious is synonymous for being a dickhead.
What?
Does that make me a dickhead?
Like working in mysterious ways? Like, what's mysterious about being an asshole?
I got nothing.
I'm mysterious.
I got nothing here.
I'm just being mysterious.
You're giving Corey more editing work as we speak.
I'm just being mysterious.
You're being something.
But, yeah.
So, subscribe. So as we wrap up, subscribe, please, if this isn't just indicative of what
literally
you can expect.
Literally, if there's ever a time
doing great.
That you want to be. We're doing so good. Isn't this great, Matt? Is this all you hoped it would be?
It's
is it
Ben, you need to stop hitting that contraption of yours off in the corner. I think that's what's happening.
So
the contraption.
We've heard your backstory, Matt. We know that you're a huge part of Lost Symphony and the music that we've put out over three records, which are now all at least announced
for
chapter three. I happen to know you're also in another band. Which we'll dive into the next hour and you know, people get to hear your beautiful voice a little bit, which I think is super exciting.
Oh, I will kill you.
But, so right, you know, right now, are there anything that you want people to check out? Obviously on Lost Symphony, you can see a ton of videos.
This is going to come out for at least 6 months, dude.
Yeah, that's
we're
fine.
Backlogged.
So if that's the case,
not quite 6 months, but.
I was gonna say at that point, I mean, so obviously all the Lost Symphony stuff, we'll probably be shooting some promo videos. They'll most likely be done by the time this comes out.
Better be done.
Is that a threat, Benny?
No, we just need Corey back.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Why are you trying to take him away from us, bro? We're on the same team. You're cannibalizing him. You're like eating the soccer team, bro.
Anyway. And I was going to say, by the time this is out, we'll hopefully 3 years gone. That's the other project. We'll have an album out. Definitely a departure
from
maybe.
What can we expect from that kind of music?
Yeah, can you tell us about, what
that's
all about?
Is it like Lost Symphony?
It's not like Lost Symphony at all. it's definitely not like Lost Symphony.
So people will actually buy it.
That's the idea.
Yeah, we'll get into that in the next episode. Yeah. So anyone that's listening, make sure you tune into the next one, because if you want a different side of Matt, I think that'll be a good chance to check
that should
out.
Be the name of the episode, A Different Side of Matt.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about it.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. 2020-D.com.
You just obstructed him advertising us.
Yeah, it's not important.
2020-D.com. Give us a thumbs
Subscribe.
Up and a like.
How do you
Subscribe.
Know they have thumbs?
I mean, there's a virtual thumb. I mean,
we don't
they could technically just be like.
Some people don't have fingers or hands.
Yes. All right. Matt, thank you.
Thank you
Stay
so much.
Stay tuned
Matt.
Later this week. Check out part
I hope
two.
You'll stick around and you
if
don't
you
ditch
haven't
us.
Listened to Matt try. On Lost Symphony, go to lostsymphony.com, watch all the videos, because You know, we talk about Kelly where we say, like, we put him against the machines. You know, like, hey, Kelly, why don't you play with Jeff Loomis? Hey, Kelly, why don't you go on a song with Marty Friedman? But what we also don't mention, because he's not, I guess, officially in the band, which, because he doesn't want to be associated with me, and I understand that. Matt goes against all these guys as well, and I don't mean goes against them, but he plays on the same tracks, and I would be embarrassed if I was trying to do a lead on a song with Marty Friedman. But nope, Jeff Loomis, nope, Matt, just like,
he takes it on.
Bring it on!
Like I said, and music's got to be fun.
And if you guys go back and listen
to
it,
fun.
One of the things that we said from the very onset, and you know, when Ollie was here, was that we wanted to showcase a lot of the, I don't want to say unknowns, but people that like didn't necessarily know against the chess master. You know what I mean? Like, you are like the guy beating the machine. And Matt, I got to tell you that like there are so many times that Corey and I were sitting in the studio just going, everything he does is just so smooth. And like Corey like has such a heart attack like editing like a lot of people. Usually everything that I do, Ollie was a heart attack. Because Ollie was like, was that it? I don't know. I think maybe if I did it, like a dissension here. Do you think the dissension's better? Well, if I build the heart, just play the fucking solo so I can fucking comp it.
Well, he had to turn the pick. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's a lot of 13 turning. Degrees.
There's a lot of.
But if you listen to Matt,
yeah,
he fucking holds his own and then some. And the last song that's going to be on Chapter 3, the way we're going out until people actually ask for us to come back, because we would love to come back, but like it might be the end. It probably is the end. It's been a long wait for the end, which if you actually know the band, that's a song, but it's probably not funny to you. But this is Chapter 3, and the last song is called My Last Goodbye, and it's the song that features our friend Ollie, and it features Matt, and it was one of the first forays between Matt and myself in the studio, and we were like, oh yeah, whatever, this is just a tune. Like, it was kind of a throwaway at the time, and now it's become the poignant end to what we've done with Ollie, and the last thing that we're releasing for now, with Ollie, which, by the way, our band One Short Breath recorded with Ollie, and like there's like, I feel like there's so much good music we've done with that guy that like the world needs to hear.
Right. Absolutely. On. And now that you've turned that outro into a whole new
a
segment,
new episode.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Matt LaPierre on 2020-2020-D.com. Subscribe. Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 24, featuring Rodolfo Zuniga, drummer for Julio Iglesias. Check it out.
Even though jazz is improvised, I definitely have played with a lot of guys that want you to read their mind.
Mm-hmm. Do they hijack you? Like, do you get hijacked? Like, sometimes you go on stage in front, and then, like, the bass player's like, they're going to follow me, or this is going to be a really bad time.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's the same as, like, any other thing in life. And there's so much personality.
Yeah. Who's the one? Oh, okay. Yeah. So in a jazz band, who's the person that has the lead singer's disease? So if you play instrumental jazz, is it the guitar player that has the attitude? Is it the trumpet player? Like, is it the sax player that are the assholes? Who are the assholes in jazz?
I think all of them. All of them.
100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.